Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom takes Tuesday off, so he missed our rain event yesterday. Did you know we had a rain event here at the station, Tom?
I am just hearing about it now.
About 12:15, I'm hearing something really strange on the, you know how here at the KVOI studio.
It wasn't the pitter-patter of reindeer?
I don't know if we have a tin roof or whatever we have, but it was like, what is that noise? And I asked our fine young engineer producer, Brendan Kraft. I think I said it on the air. I said, is that rain? And Brendan's shaking his head, no, that can't be rain. And it was like this downpour that lasted maybe 90 seconds. And it happened on the day known as El Dia de San Juan, which in Tohono O'odham culture is kind of the signals, the start of the monsoon. So it did happen, but there are a lot bigger things to come.
So it's the Bill Buckmaster official beginning.
I would say so.
Okay.
I'm marking it that way. It's Wednesday, the 25th of June, 2025. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio at the Bustos Media Center here in central Tucson, where we have five radio stations under one tin roof. No, not just one roof. This one is 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. At the end of June, that marks 14 and a half years officially. We've been doing the radio program. You can listen to the program live at my website, buckmastershow.com, also kvoi.com. When we do our telephone interviews, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, what better day to talk weather and climate with Dr. Zach Guido, the Buckmaster Show contributor on climate. Dr. Guido is an assistant research professor at the University of Arizona's Arizona Institute for Resilience, known as AIR, which coordinates interdisciplinary groups of faculty, students, and projects across the U of A campus, from climate science to public policy, law, the arts, water resources, and beyond. Hey, Zach, how are you?
I'm doing well. Not as good as you, because I didn't get any rain.
Yeah, we got a little down here at enough to dirty up the old car. And so that's usually a sign when you get your car washed, rain is on the way. But there are all sorts of harbingers of rain. Look at New Mexico. They're under pretty much every county of New Mexico under flash flood watch or flash flood warning. They really got hammered, places like Roswell and even El Paso getting a lot of rain. And that usually kind of the way it starts, right? It New Mexico gets it before we do.
Yeah, historically, that's right. Like the monsoon has begun. The monsoon storms have begun in for the most part of New Mexico. And in fact, I got a little bit humid here in Tucson yesterday. You got a little rain from that. It's part of the same system, but we're just on the western limb of this incursion from the south of a lot of moisture that's sort of bending around this surface high pressure that's extending, from Texas into eastern New Mexico. And it just hasn't, that high didn't move further west that would have pushed then this moisture into our region. So there are some chances, and I haven't seen if some of the stations out eastern Arizona, but I think there's elevated chances today of some rain there. But it'll quiet down again shortly, over the next week or so. And
Cochise County actually had some rain this
week. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Tucson yesterday was like, on the sort of eastern side, it had high dew point temperatures. But if you would have driven to the western side, it would have been a very different picture. So we were right on that tight gradient line for moisture.
If you have been in Tucson a long time, and I've been here now 37 and a half years, when you reflect on when you get that first kind of really heavy rain, it seems like it's the 4th of July. I don't even know if there are statistics on the first day of when our summer rainy season really begins.
Yeah, that weekend is historically considered the start of the monsoon here in Tucson. Now, as you mentioned before, it sort of changes depending on where you are. You know, further to the east in New Mexico, it's a little bit earlier. It's a little bit later in Phoenix, and obviously as you move north. But I actually do have statistics on National Weather Service has a nice monsoon page that sort of looks at southeast Arizona. And so we should go back and say, like, that the start of the monsoon, right? Like, there's different ways to define it. So this is
It used to be we went by 3 days, the dew point had to be, I don't know what, but, you know.
Yeah, that's right. And more recently, it's just, they've just started it calling the monsoon season onset, like, June 15th. But, that is more, and we've talked about this a lot, that is more to help sort of communicate the hazards of the monsoon and not to sort of quibble about, well, is it a monsoon, is it not? But really, like, when we think about the monsoon, you know, it's a function of when there's moisture available. And, you know, the old dew point definition was an attempt to capture that. And you didn't want to have, let's say, just this weird day of moisture that wafted in from, let's say, the north, that increased dew points above a certain threshold and then left. And so they had this sort of 3-day criteria where dew points were above a certain temperature. So I think it's 54 degrees here in Tucson, and it was different. This was another part of the challenge that Phoenix, for example, because they're a little bit lower in elevation, required a little bit more moisture in the air to have convection. And so the dew point temperature there was a little bit higher.
Is there an easy definition of dew point? I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that the vast majority of people have no idea what dew point is. Can you give us a very simple explanation?
Just think of it about as a measurement of the amount of water in the air, right? And the temperature is actually, what temperature do you have to lower that the air so that the moisture that's there rains out. So it actually becomes precipitation. But higher dew point temperatures, more moisture in the air, like, in other words, higher humidity.
Okay.
Right. So I just think of it like not so much as an absolute value, but just more relative. Like, although it is nice to be able to like understand what 54 actually means. But obviously 54 has more moisture than 30, you know, 70 has more moisture than 54. So it's just a relative, it's not a relative. It is a measure of the amount of moisture in the atmosphere.
The National Weather Service says that it looks very favorable for the rainy season to start sometime next week, which would be pretty much in line with what you were saying, some of those statistics. Did the start of the, how about 4th of July, going back, I guess they, what'd they say, since 1946?
Yeah, so I'm glad, because I sort of got to, distracted a little bit on the point that I was making.
Yes.
So I have the statistics. From the National Weather Service in Tucson. So, and they use this dew point definition. So that's why we went into that. And they looked at, so what was the date at which the dew point temperature exceeded that threshold for 3 consecutive days? And they have like 78 years that they're reporting on. And the date in which most onsets occur is actually July 3rd.
Oh.
Yeah, and that is like 10 out of the 78.
Uh-huh.
You know, and that is roughly the average. And so there's dates that occur before that.
One of the latest onsets, and I won the prize, this was off the air. What'd you ask me?
Well, I quizzed you on...
You quizzed me, and what was the question?
Well, the question was, what was the latest? And what was the latest onset? And you said July 22nd. And I said close. That was actually the 2nd.
Then you asked
But then I asked you what year, and you nailed
it. And
me.
I said 2020.
Yeah. Don't remind me of 2020.
The year of COVID. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So many horrible things happened in 2020, and including are really, really dry. And one of the, I think the scant rainfall in 2020, even though it was late starting, it never really got going.
No, 2020 was terrible. It was historically dry. When you look across the Southwest, it's in the top three, if not the driest, like in aggregate. It was not a very good picture. And then, you know, just a little bit of the monsoon history. And then the next 2 years were generational, is what I like to say. 2021 was the year in which Tucson had like the most rain of any month in July.
Wow.
And it was, you know, pretty good for much of the southern half of Arizona, particularly the metropolitan areas. And then 2022 had actually better widespread rainfall across Arizona and New Mexico. Wasn't as productive, as vigorous as the year before in some places and writ large. And then we had 2023 and 2024 were not good. Except last year, if you're in Tucson, which I'm assuming many of your listeners are mm-hmm. well, some of them at least are from here. Like, it was actually not that bad here in Tucson, but across the state, it was pretty dry.
23 was such a destructive summer, where we had neighbors who lost their roofs, and I lost a bunch of really, really, speaking of generational, trees that have been around forever.
Yep.
So I'm just keeping my fingers crossed that we don't have a big wind. Sometimes that is the first couple of storms seem to be really destructive.
Yeah, I mean, last year I had roof issues. We had big hail. Actually, at my house, it was above average rainfall.
So, oh, and
yeah. But one of them was like these big hail, this big hailstorm that ended up like putting holes in my roof.
Oh, and that just destroyed a lot of the plants in the garden too. by the way, a listener just pointed out another horrible thing that happened in 2020. That was the Bighorn Fire.
So that's right.
The air quality was absolutely horrible here in the valley. There'd been no rain. We had a big fire on the mountain. The smoke was in the air. Oh, that was a really good summer to be out of town.
It was. And that's a really good point, because there's a relationship between the monsoon onset and the suppression of a fire, right? Uh-huh. Like, we need... Our fire season is right now.
Yes.
And we need the monsoon to begin in earnest. We need it to sort of reduce the fire risk. And and 2020, like, there was minimal rainfall, and it just was elevated risk throughout the entire season. And we had the Bighorn Fire right outside of Tucson.
All right, let's take a break. It's segment one now, Into the Books. Segment two is Waiting in the Wings, after we take our first break on the Buckmaster Show Midweek Edition. We will be right back with U of A climate scientist, Dr. Zach Guido.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studio, when we do our telephone interviews at 790-2040. That is presented by our friends at Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. And of course, people can always call anytime during the program. We're talking with Dr. Zach Guido. He joins us once a month. We talk about climate, and he's, of course, always a valuable resource for us each month, but especially so this time of year when we have our big event here in Southern Arizona, monsoon season. Of course, monsoon is an Arabic word that means wind, and it's all about the direction of the wind, really, depending on how the wind is blowing. That's how we're going to get the rain up here, generally coming up from the south in Mexico, and suddenly the desert becomes very tropical. And as Zach was pointing out, what was it, 2 years ago? Was it 22 that July, it looked like the interior of the island of Oahu in Hawaii, where the Army Rangers do their training for jungle warfare. It became so green here. But then, as I recall, being a weather hobbyist that I am, it tapered off that year, and August was not very robust. Is that your recollection?
Oh, boy. I think you're right. I get 2021 and 2022 a little mixed up in terms of, like, how they evolved. I think you're actually right. And I also remember how green it was during both of those years.
Yes.
Particularly in July, it was fantastic. I mean, yeah, hopefully we get another vigorous July and even, even a full monsoon, this year. I'd be excited. We're sort of due to lackluster monsoons, in a row for the most part. So fingers crossed.
And we are now on the radar, if you will, the National Weather Service. They put out a climate risk analysis for eight to 14 days. We're now in that risk category.
Yeah, that's right.
And that would be for thunderstorms and all that goes with that, of course.
That's right.
Hopefully it won't be those, what are they, the high winds that become so low. Downdrafts. Yeah, the downdrafts. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, I think, I mean, looking out at the models, looking at the weather forecast, like reading, the discussions, the forecast discussions, like it does feel like we're a little bit a ways from the start in Tucson, but there is indication that the sort of regional conditions, that high pressure ridge will build and be in a favorable location, and moisture will move into move up from the south and create like the at least the moisture variable that's important for monsoon. And it looks like that is probably gonna be in place right around the historical onset. Mm-hmm. Whether or not, you know, we talk about this every year about the monsoon. I mean, there's a couple important ingredients to it. Obviously,
wind.
Wind is one.
Wind direction of the wind.
Yep. Okay. So in my mind, there's three main ones.
What are they?
Well, obviously, there has to be moisture around. So that's the first one. Now, that is largely driven by this position of this four corners high, right? Mm-hmm. So as the sort of center of it moves further to our north above Tucson, mm-hmm. we're actually able to get southerly flow, mm-hmm. right? So that position of the ridge is pretty important for telling us when we're going to have that ingredient. Mm-hmm. Without moisture, forget about it. Mm-hmm. But we've had years in which there's been moisture around and you just don't get a lot of rain. Mm-hmm. And so there, you have to be able to like squeeze out that moisture in different ways. One of them is you actually have to have the vertical profile in the atmosphere to be unstable. So you have to be able to lift the moist air near the surface upwards so that it squeezes out. Because as you move air up, it gets colder. The colder air holds less moisture. Rain falls out.
So unstable air.
Unstable air. And you can do that in a couple ways. So the sun, through convection, does that. It warms up the surface and mm-hmm. it sort of creates rising air, mm-hmm. right? So that happens through convection. You know, the mountains are another important part to this. Mountains mechanically lift. So as air moves, let's say by wind, and they confront topography, they're going to follow the topography. Mm-hmm. So they move upwards.
Yeah.
And that is, in fact, why you see more rainfall on the mountains, because the dynamic conditions, the dynamic instability is greater on mountains than over the deserts. Mm. So for the deserts, you need there to be an atmospheric a thermodynamic profile, vertical profile that allows for there to be a lot of rising air. Mm-hmm. And that's not always the case. Mm-hmm. Like you can actually have warmer air move in aloft that changes the temperature profile and all
so
these
what,
kinds
your
of details.
So your three are...
Yeah, and the third one is winds.
Wind.
And the winds are helpful to blow the storms that form on the mountains off into the valleys, and they also help organize storms. And they can also act to suppress. So it's not just higher winds or a more it's not just winds lead to more monsoons, mm-hmm. right? It's also about the directionality of the wind. So there's a lot of details in it, but...
Is it too late to enter your contest?
It is not too late to enter. If you're interested, now I'm talking to the audience.
Yes,
if you're interested in fantasy forecasting or fantasy sports in general, we created a fantasy monsoon forecast game where you can make your predictions for monthly totals in Tucson, Flagstaff, Phoenix,
El Paso,
and Albuquerque. Mm-hmm. And you score points based on how accurate your forecasts are and how risky they are. Mm-hmm. And you compete against people. Mm-hmm. And you have to do that the day before each month begins. So June 30th would be the final day that you can enter for July 1st.
And you can enter, of course, online.
You do it online.
And,
so just
and
search,
how, where do you go?
Just search, Google search, monsoon fantasy forecast. Mm-hmm. In some variation, and you'll find us.
And there was a payday in prize money, but the University of Arizona, of course,
we,
with the financial situation, that was kind of went by the wayside.
Yeah,
but do have some kind of an award, correct?
Yeah. Well, what we did is we organized it much like March Madness, where you can create your own sort of subgroups and invite your colleagues, and we do encourage friendly competition amongst them.
Uh huh. And it's interesting, the people, you've been doing this 4 or 5 years, and the people that win these contests are amateurs. They're not some people of them, like in your business.
This is the beauty of it.
Climatology.
I claim no, like, privileged information about, like, predicting the monsoon, and that's the beauty of this. Yeah. You would think I would, but, like, I shrug my shoulders.
Okay, it would not be an interview with Dr. Zach Guida with asking him, are we in an El Nino, La Nino, or are we neutral?
We're neutral. Yeah, and the expectation, and this is historically, like, we end up, like, moving out of either El Nino or La Nina in the summer months. Mm-hmm. So that's quite common. The expectation, I believe, however, is that we're going to remain, like, there's greater chances that we'll remain in neutral conditions for this upcoming winter than anything else. So we'll just have to see it. It's a really, they call it the spring predictability barrier. We might have passed it, but it's hard to forecast what El Nino will do at this point. And it gets better as each month passes, but we should have a little bit more clarity on whether or not it'll be a neutral event. I will say this though, mm-hmm. neutral events have often produced some of the wettest winters on record, as well as the driest. So, like, all possibilities are open.
Mm. I'm all with it. All in for a neutral Pacific Ocean temperatures. That's what El Nino, La Nino is really all about. Don't have time to go into that, but Dr. Zach Guida, thanks a lot. Hope you have a pretty good summer, but we will check in with you in July and see how we're doing. Thanks a lot, Zach.
Thank you.
All right, take our mid-show break. It's Buckmaster on a Wednesday afternoon. We'll be right back. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition. When the rains come, of course, every plant over at Green Things will breathe. Oh, my goodness. What a beautiful sigh of relief at Green Things, 3384 East River Road. They've got 13 acres over there. I know the owners very well, Jan and Jack, and they're probably isn't very much space that is not occupied by something green. And the people there are so knowledgeable. If you go by and, for instance, say, you know, I'd like something that would survive our heat of the summer, they will not only point the direction you should go on the property, they will walk you there. That's great salesmanship. 3384 East River Road, Green Things, AZ.com. And their sister business is Zocalo Village, and Arizona's largest selection of pottery is home there at Zocalo Village. When we do our telephone interviews, the live line, 790-2040, is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. We're so blessed on this program to have 24 people, a couple dozen, who we call upon on a regular basis. And we have a category I like to refer to as faith and spirituality. And our contributor there is Father Robert Hendrickson, rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church, where I have been known to show up on occasion as a member in good standing at St. Philip's. Father Robert recently announced that after 10 years at the helm of the largest Episcopal congregation in Arizona, he's moving on to a new and exciting initiative with the Episcopal organization that's known as Forward Movement, which is widely known for its daily devotional Forward Day by Day. Father Robert will become the chief of discipleship initiative. So the chief is with us in studio. How are you, Father Robert?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. So how do you come? This is exciting for you, I know, and it's especially exciting for those that like you very much, that you will still be a member of our community.
Yes, I'll still be. We'll be here in Tucson. It's sort of amazing how these things can work these days, but we'll have a staff of seven people, all of whom are working remotely from all sorts of different parts of the country, which in some ways is great because we are producing materials that are for the entire Episcopal Church. So to have people who are serving in various communities, Episcopal communities all around the country, is a huge gift. But it's particularly a gift to us to be able to have that kind of family stability and be able to stay here in Tucson and still do this work.
Mm-hmm. So the Episcopal Church has given its blessing to this and your new position.
Yes, and so
how does all of that work?
Yeah,
the hierarchy.
Sure. Yes. So Forward Movement is technically the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church is the honorary chair of the board. It was formed by a command of what's called General Convention, which is the organization that essentially meets every 3 years. When it meets, it's the second largest democratically elected institution in the world after the Parliament of India. So it meets every 3 years, and it sort of charts the course for the Episcopal Church for the following 3 years. And Forward Movement was a body expressly created by General Convention for the renewal of the Episcopal Church. Mm-hmm. So this is funded by a significant grant from someone who wanted to see this work commence. And then the presiding bishop's office is invested in seeing this take place. And so we recognize it comes at a kind of crucial juncture in the life of the Episcopal Church, and I think in the life of Christian witness more broadly, even than the Episcopal Church. So I'm excited to be taking it on and excited to sort of see where things go and excited to also to see sort of where life at St. Philip's goes. You know, I haven't been there long enough to make it a monarchical, sort of system, but have been there long enough to become deeply invested in the place and care about the people there. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they grow and change over the years.
You said in your goodbye letter that there would be very few parishes in North America that you would be interested in leaving St. Philip's for.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, I would go and do the same things I did here. So why go do that? You know, I'd probably hire the same people and everything and steal them all from St. Philip.
Yes.
We're so settled into life here and so happy with where things are and so thrilled to seeing how our boys have grown and changed in life at St. Philip's. And so there was really no draw for me to go look at another parish mm-hmm. and to sort of, you know, go through all the upheaval that comes with that. To find a community that I don't think would ever quite be the same as the one we're in now.
Mm-hmm.
The previous rectors who have left here have all, generally they retire after this. So I'm in a sort of odd position that I'm doing something else, which is unusual.
Yeah, and you're pretty darn young to even think about retirement. Take it from a guy who doesn't seem to have retirement in my bones. Chief of Discipleship Initiatives, I'm very curious about, first of all, how do you define what discipleship means?
Well, it's a great question. We're sort of sorting through this ourselves in some ways. You know, it's not a concept that is sort of in common parlance in the Episcopal Church, but really what it boils down to is how do you live the Christian life day to day in every aspect of your life? So how do you represent the image of Christ in your work, in your relationships at home, even in your leisure time, in the way you volunteer and are present to the community, and so it's about helping people find a way to see the whole of their life as being part of kind of a mission field where we're always at the work of Christ in all of those different aspects of our life, which, you know, for some of us is easier than others. And sometimes we do things that we don't even realize could be classified as discipleship. So, you know, for example, the way we care for our family members, the way we sort of honor those lifelong commitments with people, that's part of discipleship. The way we work with integrity in our workplace, that's discipleship. So I think that part of this is helping people reframe the way they think of their Christian journey, but also to see all these different aspects of their life as places where they can live out that Christian journey in new ways.
If we think of the original disciples mm-hmm. to Jesus, does that help us kind of focus on what this might be all about?
Yeah, I mean, so the original disciples, their goal was to sort of carry the news of the good news of Christ to the world around them. And they did that in so many different ways, in so many different places. And that's the call for every Christian today. And it's essentially the challenge for every Christian today is to, you know, Jesus asked the question, who do you say that I am? And by the way we live our life, that's our answer to that question. So how do we give as robust an answer to Jesus in saying who we think he is in the way we live our life? And that's really kind of, I think, the goal of discipleship is to offer a robust answer to that question, who do you say that I am?
And discipleship isn't about it's not a solo kind of deal. It's about communal.
No, I mean, it's very hard to sort of, I guess you can do this. You can be mean to yourself and then forgive yourself. I suppose that's possible. But generally, the Christian virtue is lived out in community, right? These places become the crucible where our Christian virtue is formed and forged. So it requires community, and that, you know, that which runs very contrary to the kind of contemporary notions of private spirituality, which would be quite foreign to Christians from most of Christian history.
Mm-hmm. So some faiths would call this type of work missionary work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's missionary work as a component of it. So if part of your call to discipleship, to being a follower of Jesus, felt like it was leading you to down the street or across borders or whatever it is to preach the good news, then that is part of discipleship. So that missionary work is an aspect of discipleship, but also all kinds of different Christian ministry, which is a very broad term, is folded within that term discipleship. And so really discipleship is sort of, you know, can be best be thought of as Christian living. And most of the things we can do in our day-to-day life are part of that if we give them the right framing and the right attention and the right prayerfulness.
The folks who are coming to the Episcopal Church through your own experience at St. Philip's in the Hills, are they coming with some kind of an Episcopal background, or are these people from other faiths?
We tend to get a majority of folks coming from other traditions at this point. So, for example, we, you know, if we do a newcomer class of the 30 or so who might be in a newcomer class, maybe two or three are Episcopalians previously. And so what we find is that it's an enormous gift because people bring the kind of gifts of these other traditions to us and sort of reinvigorate our parish in new ways, which my favorite review, and if your listeners go on Google, they'll see this. My favorite review of St. Philip's says, "This place is weird if you're a real Episcopalian," which I'm very proud of because it is a strange place, right?
Yes.
And that's because it is not ossified or fossilized in a particular Episcopal identity. It's actually been infused with sort of evangelical and Catholic and other sort of infusions as well. So it kind of revitalizes life there with aspects of other traditions.
All right. When we come back with Father Robert, we're going to be talking about peace, and may seem very elusive in this very troubled time that we're living in. And folks love to say, you know, these are the worst of times. But when I reflect on that, when wasn't there some war going on?
Yes, absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah. So everybody says, oh, it's the worst of times. But let's kind of talk when we come back about how can we at least in our own personal lives perhaps make it the best of times. On the Buckmaster Show, we'll be right back.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Welcome back. It's the Buckmaster Show. When I talk about Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico this time of year, boy, it's an easy sell. The reason it's an easy sell, it's like the elevation there is think of Denver, Mile High City, about 5,500 feet. That's kind of the official elevation over in Silver City, but there are some places in town that go up to 7,000 feet. What does that mean in the summer? I can tell you, it's cooler over there. Probably at least 10 degrees cooler over in Silver City. And they've had, as we were talking in our first half hour today, a lot of rain over in New Mexico, which means the Gila National Wilderness will be greening up and it's going to be delightful hiking over in the Land of Enchantment. Start your planning for your trip to Silver City by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We continue with segment number four, or segment number two, as far as Father Robert Henriksen is concerned, because this is our second segment with Father Robert, who is the rector at St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. He will be leaving his role there at the end of August after 10 years. He's done a great job, but he's moving on now to a new initiative that is part of the Episcopal Church, and he will be, actually, his title will be Chief of Discipleship Initiatives under the umbrella of an Episcopal organization known as Forward Movement. All right, we pretty much covered in our first segment with you, Father Robert, about discipleship, and as you kind of think about the new job, I'll tell you what I'm thinking about. A lot of people are thinking about, here we had a weekend where the United States did take military action with the so-called bunker busters, and there was a lot of, I know I was really, had a lot of feelings about, well, oh my gosh, is the United States now at war with Iran? But regardless of that, it created a lot of tension, at least for me, and I know a lot of people over the weekend about, and had us thinking about, is that, what about peace? Is it even possible? Is it?
Well, yeah, in the fullness of time, as Scripture says, I think peace is possible. But, you know, and this is why, I mean, Christians are constantly sort of exhorted to not put their trust in the powers and principalities of this world, but in the kingdom to come. And that is a kingdom of peace. But it does require us to figure out how to be ambassadors of peace as well, and how to live as citizens of the kingdom, which means live as people who promote peace. And the tension in that is, it's easy to say peace, 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 but when you're looking at situations where people are being horribly abused, I mean, it's hard to just sort of stand by when you have, I don't use this word lightly, a ghastly regime in Iran.
Yes.
In terms of how it treats its own people and its neighbors.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so it's such a balance in terms of the Christian obligation. How do you both protect the wider good, ensure that most people are taken care of and not abused? And so it creates a real difficult tension, I think, a sort of a spiritual dissonance in people, where you're trying to figure out what is the best for the common good. And the answers are not always easy or clean. I mean, I know there's a hospital in Gaza, Ali Arab Hospital, which is run by the Anglican Church. I know the family who runs the hospital.
Really?
It's been hit six times in this war. It's not a terrorist site. It's you know.
Is it even existing, or is it rubble?
It's mostly rubble at this point.
Oh my gosh!
You know, and so these things are so complicated, because you completely understand Israel's right to defend itself. And then you also know the reality on the ground, and for people on the ground, is just a horror. I mean, and that's who suffers in this. It is the common people every day who just want to live their lives, and yet the extremes keep pulling them back into these sort of cycles of violence again and again and again. Mm-hmm. And so it's the answers are not clean nor easy, which is, I think, why the task is that much more urgent for us to sort of figure out how do we promote peace, but a peace that has justice at its core.
Yeah, and when you think about that horrible regime in Iran, and think about them if they did control a nuclear weapon.
Absolutely. I mean, there's you look at the nearest analogous regime is Syria, which was more than happy to use chemical weapons on its own population.
I know.
You know, so we're not talking about what I would call sort of I don't want to say irrational, but sort of the you know most nations that are equipped in this way do not deploy weapons of mass destruction against their own populations.
Right.
And right. so I think that that's our only model we have to look at, mm-hmm. right? And so mm-hmm. so we haven't seen rational use of these kinds of weapons so far. And so I think it's incumbent upon us to figure out how do we stop them from getting into the hands of folks who will do harm to civilians. There's just no, and it's a complicated picture. Maybe we should have stayed in the JCPOA, the joint, you know, the nuclear agreement. I don't know. I'm not a policy expert, but I do sort of look at the situation and think we have to figure out how do we do our utmost to protect people who are innocent. And I don't have clean or easy answers to that, but that seems to be the moral imperative.
And living in the world has never been easy. There's always been war.
Absolutely.
Environmental degradation, social strife, it goes on and on. So then we have to think about how do we bring Father Robert peace into our own lives? And that pretty much what we can control are our own lives.
Yeah, I think we can control our own lives, and I think we can control how we respond to the world around us, because I think that the way we choose to see people or not see them has a ripple effect, right? And so the way we choose to talk about people, the way we choose to either treat people with dignity or to dehumanize people, and we see it in our own country, right? I mean, there's this drift. And I'm not a huge fan of the kind of all the sort of politically correct terms that we can argue over, but when you just talk about people as illegals, there's a dehumanization factor there, right? And so I think we need to be guard our own the way we talk, the way we think about human dignity here at home too. But that really does begin in our own homes, right? The way we think about our neighbors and the way we think about our obligation to respect the dignity of every person. It begins in really, really small ways. As you say, we have control over that. Mm-hmm. But I think by exercising control over that, we can begin to change our communities around us and begin to sort of have an impact on things that seem like they're beyond our control. Mm-hmm. But I would say that the forces who benefit from things seeming beyond our control do not have our best interests at heart usually.
Mm-hmm. So many of us would like to live kind of in a fashion that would reflect, I guess, God's ultimate plan for us, which would be peace and wholeness.
Yeah, I think, yes, peace and wholeness and a life lived for the good of the other. I mean, I think that's where... You know, The tension I see right now is there's a kind of obsession with people talking about rights. I have a right to this. I have a right to that. Whatever it is, if we were a country talking about our obligations, we'd be in a much healthier place. Mm-hmm. And so part of our freedom is the freedom to act for the benefit of others, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what gives your life meaning. Mm-hmm. And so to my mind, if we can sort of reforge that sense of mutual obligation, mm-hmm. We'd be in a much healthier place. And I think a much healthier place internally. I mean, when you live a life focused on the good of others, your life takes on a sort of meaning and quality that I think deep down we know when that's missing, but we don't always know how to act to fix it.
Mm-hmm. All right, Father Robert, about 30 seconds. Any final words of wisdom for our Buckmaster Show audience?
Oh, my words of wisdom are 45 seconds, so we're just out a lot of time, I guess.
I could give you a few more seconds. But what's your final words?
No, I mean my final words is just to encourage people to live in peace. And the Psalm 34, there's an encouragement there that says, "Refrain from anger and leave rage alone." And I think that's the call for all of us right now in these days. Refrain from anger and leave rage alone.
All right, Father Robert Hendrickson from St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church. And we'll have Father Robert with us at St. Philip's through August. And then he will start his new program as Chief of Discipleship Initiatives with the Episcopal Church. Thanks, Father Robert.
Thank you so much.
All right. On behalf of Father Robert and Tom, always doing such a fine job on the other side of the glass. We keep him on the other side of the glass, but we can see here what he's up to in the studio. All right. Hope everybody has a great afternoon. Bill Buckmaster, really same wish every day, wishing everybody well.